And it's really unclear to most Haitians why these foreign troops are on their soil.
On this third anniversary of the earthquake, let's end with the words of Edwige Dantucot, the Haitian author.
They're portrayed as sort of passive receivers and not actors enough. They have the will. They have the ability. All they need now is this opportunity by those both inside Haiti and outside of Haiti who control the purse strings of this country, that they have to remember that these men and women here need to be able and want to and are willing to rebuild their country if they're given the opportunity to do so.
That was Haitian author Edwige Dantucot. We spoke to her 2 years ago on the first anniversary of the Haitian earthquake. And that does it for today's show. Go to democracynow.org for part two of our conversation with Jonathan Katz, his new book, The Big Truck That Went By, How the World Came to Save Haiti and Left Behind a Disaster. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report.
This is WHFR Dearborn, and now it's time for our public affairs show, and we call it the new WHFR Journal. Welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal. Why is it new? It's not the same as last week. Yes, this is news and views about Dearborn and the surrounding area. And welcome. Today is January the 11th, 2013. Happy New Year, if that still is important to anyone out there.
It's always important.
My name is Jay Koronek, and I'm here with WHFR News Director Dennis Reimars. And so, Dennis, have to ask the big question, and we promoted the Dearborn Heights News and Views on this last Tuesday, and it didn't happen.
It did not happen.
So I want to apologize to our listeners from the station. We've had unbelievable computer problems and technical problems here at the station. We've tried not to have to share that over the air.
Sure.
We had some great classical music during that hour.
Thank God for satellite.
Yeah, but and that was working. But we're making changes, and things are getting better. So Dennis is the erstwhile host, along with Netapigian, usually as one of the Dearborn City Councilmen. And I heard the file, which was unfortunately in shape that was not able to be broadcast. Again, not Dennis's fault, not my fault directly, although I'll take the blame. But we had technical glitches there. What are we going to do for Janet Badalow?
Well, we would like to get her on a future show. In fact, I'm going to contact her later to see if she can maybe come on this show next Friday if she's available to spend some time. And the reason why, and we can share this, because we broke it. We were the first to break on the show that never aired. The fact that Janet Badalow announced her desire to run for mayor of Dearborn Heights.
Oh, boy.
She had told, as she explained during the interview, that she had told family, obviously, her husband and other people and some close confidants, this is the first time she was going public with it. And I think it's really important that we get her reasoning out there, as well as some of the things that she talked about over the course of the last year that kind of were catalysts.
So in Dearborn Heights this November, there's a mayoral election just like there is in Dearborn.
Exactly.
And a council election, too, I assume.
There will be, from what I understand,
just maybe
four,
on rotation.
Four open
not all
spots.
Of them. Yeah, okay.
And she will, in May, give up her spot on council. And basically what she explained is this is a commitment. If she does not get the mayor's position, she's no longer on council either. And she's, as she put it, out of a job. And this is somebody that's...
Well, because technically her position is one that has to be voted on in November.
Exactly.
If she was still in rotation, if it wasn't her election year, I bet she could.
Well, she did when she lost for city clerk. She ran for city clerk, but she still maintained
her
spot.
She kept her same job. So technically, I just want to say, and it's not against Ms. Badalow at all, but technically she just can't decide to do both. But that is making quite a commitment, and it's something to tell people about, is that I'm really serious about this. I won't have a backup.
Exactly.
This is a big deal to me, and I'm sure we'll probably have, if Mayor Politko decides to run again, mm-hmm. We'll have him on sometime before the fall, just like the mayoral wannabes for Dearborn, yep. You know, certainly.
And we'll find out more, like you said, mm-hmm. between now and May. But yeah. Ms. Badalow, she's made this commitment, and 12 years, so that she's done three terms on council.
Well, I know her name has been in the stories, and she's always active in the council meetings. Making comments and sponsoring bills.
Or, sure, you bet, ordinances. She doesn't know that may not know that the show didn't air. So, Ms. Badalow, if you are listening, expect a call a little bit later. Thank you.
Yeah. So we're going to get her on soon, folks, on this show. And of course, Dearborn Heights News and Views, we're almost absolutely positively sure, gremlins aside, that it will be the second Tuesday next month, and you'll be able to listen to it as a podcast afterwards, but not this time around.
Just so people know, it was a really, really good show. You would have loved it. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Okay. I was going to ask about Dearborn Heights, another Dearborn Heights issue. Dennis, tell us the background on this WOW Cable incident. Was the Dearborn Heights DPW, Department of Public Works, really responsible for the outage of, or the poor quality of WOW Cable in Dearborn and the rest of the area?
What's interesting is that we don't know who actually pointed the finger at Dearborn, but for a while that was, the Director of Information for the city, Mary Landrosch, was fielding a lot of calls. It turns out Dearborn was not at fault. It was something that happened in Dearborn Heights, but they're not positive exactly what it was.
Well, I know what some people were told. I have friends who are WOW customers that were on the phone for hours waiting to get through to tech support, and some of the tech support people, maybe not all of them, and maybe they were just guessing, or maybe they were based on rumors, but they said it was your city's DPW, and they were talking to people that they should have known were in Dearborn.
Sure.
But depending on where the tech support are based, you know, they may not even be in Michigan, and so maybe they don't know the difference between Dearborn and Dearborn Heights.
No, you're actually right.
You know.
But the fact is that it was cleared up, and I give credit to Mary Landrosch for, you know, she didn't just come out and go, it wasn't us, it was somebody else. She very diplomatically handled this.
Right. And well, that's important because Patch.com got the story and they indicated it was Dearborn. So they got the first version of the story.
Exactly.
And then somehow the city got in contact with regional manager, director. He heard about it and he sent an email to all the customers. Of course, if you're a customer and you don't have email, you didn't hear about it from him.
Exactly.
I didn't get a letter in the mail, but maybe they sent letters in the mail to the people that don't have email.
I have to say that my office is right there where I would field most of those phone calls, and we didn't get any from any Dearborn Heights residents.
I have to say, though, in spite of what they said here, they were having technical problems before this break.
Oh, yeah.
But the break really just zapped all the channels. There was a lot of digital outage every time, many times an hour, of many of the channels. And that was going on even in December, mm-hmm. even before this incident, which may be due to digging or some other problem with the Dearborn Heights DPW, but whatever. I mean, of course, accidents happen.
Sure.
I will say, and some people said even in the Patch.com commentaries that I read, that, you know, WOW has been great. They've been perfect. They're great phone support all the way up to last December. And
right.
then the bottom fell out. First of all, of their tech support, all of a sudden they said they changed some things. You couldn't get through for hours or ever. I did send an email to their tech support, which is possible, because they said, I can't get through to you. My remote control is dying. Mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't the battery. It was I just couldn't push the buttons anymore. I had pushed them so many times trying to find something decent to watch they just wore out. And so the guy responded in 2 days, although that says they're supposed to respond within 24 hours on the website. He said, we're sending you the new one free in the mail. You get it in 2 days.
Good.
So I was only 3 days of watching the same damn channel, but I'm sorry. Can I say that? I didn't say that.
The interesting thing, I felt the comments in the Dearborn Press and Guide following that press release from Dearborn about it not being their fault, at that point, the commenters didn't even care. They said, that's fine. The cable service stinks anyway, you know? They put it under that big, broad umbrella.
There was a song by Bruce Springsteen a few years ago. I think it was only like 60 channels and 60 channels and nothing on. Yeah.
Now, how many are there?
Well, I usually work on the bottom 300, and it's really tough. It's really tough. And of course, December and January, that's the month I get more Netflix DVDs sent to me because there's no new shows on. Right. There's just a few shows that still are finishing their season or mid-year season or whatever it is. And because ratings say that most people are not watching TV, that the actual number of people that watch in December and January are not there. And that's been that way for years and years. It's the lowest viewership time of the year. So now the networks are smart. And they say, well, let's save our new shows for the ratings periods, mm-hmm. which are not December and January. Because, well, as long as nobody's watching anyway, why should we waste a new show that we spend money on for just a couple of viewers? So they have chosen to put on rerun after rerun and third-rate holiday movies and just unbelievable stuff. So I don't really watch any TV to speak of in December and January.
You've been involved in telecom for a long time, and you know that they've really changed the way they present shows. Shows have a very short window of opportunity to succeed before they pull the plug.
Well, even on the major networks, they don't have the same number of episodes each year.
No.
They're down from as many as 29 or more in the olden days of new episodes to like 13.
Sure.
And then the cable channels have basically, and I think it's fine, is that they've started running them more than once a week, and one time new in a regular slot, and then they do them again. And then after the 13 weeks, maybe they take a break of 4 or 5 weeks and rerun them again. And then they, you know, they put other stuff. So it's I don't think it's a bad plan, but there's a lot less original programming on than there was before. And talking to some people last week about this, they indicated too, or they said, well, there's just nothing on that's any good. Well, right, if you don't have Showtime or HBO, or I think those are the two major pay channels that have original programming.
They do.
You know, what's Homeland? The Homeland program is that Showtime or HBO?
I think so. I've never
whatever
watched
it is, because I don't have them now, because I don't think it's worth that extra money. But I know both Showtime and HBO have some real quality regular series.
Like The Sopranos.
Not just movies.
Well, stuff like that played for years.
I mean, I didn't like that. But they have more freedom. They can use more adult language without worrying about it. But they can get in more difficult, dramatic situations. And they have some great programming on those pay channels if you can afford to pay for it.
Right.
If you can't, too bad for you. In any event, let's turn to other stories here. That was the Dearborn Heights abbreviated report, sort of.
Stay tuned for more.
For the week.
Next month.
Looking at Dearborn Heights, just going down quickly, Dearborn Heights Press and Guide from last Sunday, Mariana K. Sablani, who was editor at the Arab American News, based here in Dearborn, for 28 years. That's a record as editor. We're in our 28th year of broadcasting here at WHFR, so she started about the same time. Not an Arab American, even, although she married the man who was, I believe, the publisher, and then she took over being editor. They divorced, but she stayed as editor.
That's job loyalty.
Because I think the guy is still the publisher. So,
yeah.
But I mean, maybe it's an amicable thing.
Well,
I hope so. But anyway, she took the job very seriously. What a great journalist. It's a terrible loss of a great journalist in Dearborn. She was 64 years old, but, you know, what a great career, and did a great job to get the Arab American opinions expressed strongly as was necessary over those years. And I wanted to jump to something you mentioned today. I don't know if it's been reported anywhere else, but Tim Powers is no longer the editor of the Dearborn Press and Guide.
I spoke with him a couple days ago, and he's retired. A mutually agreed upon retirement with the Press and Guide or Heritage Papers, and he that was last week. Kind of caught me off guard because he was my editor there. And, of course, I've worked with – he would have been the third editor at the Press and Guide I've worked with, including Mary Landrosh back late 1990 – well, like 2000, and then Tracy Belazy. But Tim, just a great guy to work with. And, in fact, I remember the first time I submitted a story, he made a couple changes, and I said, well, I'm sorry about that. And he said, you know what? If you're perfect, I don't have a job, so don't worry. Just learn from it, you know? He was just had a really good attitude as far as approaching. I wouldn't call myself a new writer, but I was new to what they were doing.
Well, before he became editor of the Press and Guide, he was the Dearborn Heights editor at the Press and Guide for many, many years. Wrote editorials, followed every council meeting. I loved his reporting. He's a great balanced reporter. Never met him in person, never been on the show here, but maybe in his retirement he might want to come back and do some kibitzing.
And he really does. He's
kibitzing?
Kibitzing. He's got to put the emphasis on the right syllable.
That's
anyway,
right.
He does have a lot of options in his retirement because he wants to stay active, so it's kind of cool.
Maybe we can get him as a volunteer at WHFR.
You know what? I see that twinkle in your eye.
Always looking for new volunteers.
Hear that, Tim?
Give Dennis a little competition here.
There we go.
No, I mean, we would like to do more local news, and as long as it doesn't take away from a very happy and wonderful retirement. And if he has plans to get out of Michigan, I can understand that.
Yeah.
Tax laws and so on for retired people. I understand that.
Yeah, that's really something very popular.
And, but here's the point. It's not just sorry to see you leave, but you did a great job, Tim Powers. They're not appointing another local editor, are they, at the Press and Guide?
No, they won't fill his position directly, but they will have somebody overseeing what he did along
so
with
it's like
other
a types. Regional editor for several papers.
Absolutely.
Which means we'll get more stories that are in the other papers and fewer stories that are probably based in Dearborn.
Well, you know, and I haven't spoken to the new gentleman yet. I know his name and I know of him, but I haven't, and I don't know if there are opportunities.
Yeah, well, we'll
for
see what he decides to do.
Yeah.
They need more full-time people, as do many jobs, in order to do a better job of researching and investigating stories. When you spend half your time doing crime stories, which anybody can copy out of the police blotter, and then you don't dispute, you don't do any additional research. The way the police said it happened, that's the way it happened.
Right.
Well, of course, the police, the good cops, they're trying to do as accurately as they can, but it's only one point of view. Even they might agree with that. And they're doing the best they can, I think. I'll try to be as positive as I can in terms of why they arrest people and what the circumstances were. But, you know, people might even lie to them. Even witnesses, so-called, wouldn't necessarily see it right. And so the police don't necessarily get it completely right. They get it as right as they can. And so I wouldn't put a crime story in the paper responsibly, in the perfect world, right? And I know there is no such thing. But without also doing investigating and seeing if some of the people involved might want to make a comment directly to the paper. Follow up the facts a little bit, at least, because we know that no single source is going to get it 100% right all the time.
That's true. That's true. And I was just going to say that a police report is very objective, sure.
Well, it's supposed to be definitive, and obviously they're going to,
But that's why we have trials
court,
and things like that, too, to make
sure. Right, to get the other points of view before we actually draw conclusions.
Right.
I guess there is a small reason for putting some, but they usually pick the crazier things in the police blotter too, because it's just human interest. Oh, look, somebody stole 300 pairs of men's underwear.
Right.
Sometimes they might think it's helpful because, there have been an awful lot of break-ins in December and January in Dearborn and Dearborn Heights.
Right.
And they've been reporting those. That's personal property theft. And what can you do? Stay home all the time?
Right.
Do you have to go out and buy a burglar alarm or something for your place? Join the Neighborhood Association watch group if you have one? There's all those options, but that's the sponsoring fear and trembling. Basically, I'm sorry to say, with the exception of murder in Detroit, crime is down in general across the U.S. And in fact, it's Chicago that's now murder city.
I did not know that.
Yeah, but not downtown Chicago. All the rich areas around, there's no crime there at all. It's the South Side. As always, South Side gave rise to, I believe, the Al Capone and his people. The South Side is where more of the poor people live, and the Southeast or Southwest Side of Chicago. And just their numbers alone, it's still Chicago, they make Chicago the murder capital of the U.S. For the last several years. And that's nobody can quite explain that other than it's the high poverty areas. People get desperate, I think.
You're talking about the police reports, and that's a heck of a lot easier to review them and then, kind of paraphrase it or whatever.
Right.
But have you ever gone to court and just kind of paid attention to some of the stuff that's going on? Because I always felt a court reporter, somebody that would just sit in there. I've learned more from, not from my own cases, my kids or other people that I've joined, our company to court. I've learned a lot about it. And one of the things I want to tell you, did you know that if you have a handicap sticker, it's only for your vehicle? You can't, like, say my mother-in-law, say, I can't take hers and put it in my car and drive her somewhere. That's illegal. Did you know that?
Yeah, I knew that.
Oh, okay. Well, everybody I tell this, they're like, oh, I didn't know that, because they think you can bring it with the person.
No, I guess, who knows that the, no, you, it has to be somewhat attached to the windshield. To,
and then, but as part of the vehicle. It,
right.
It's only for that vehicle.
Yes.
I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I know.
Sorry to make that sidetrack.
No, no, and I do think there's value in having school groups, high school, maybe government classes, whatever they call them now. It was called civics classes in my day.
Yep.
To actually spend time, maybe a whole day or two, in maybe the district court, and then maybe even somehow try to organize and spend a day in criminal court in downtown Detroit, even.
Wow.
You know, I think they could probably pass on divorce court, although that's interesting too at times.
Yeah.
But I'm just is that for the minor crimes, even a major, because it's not like television.
No.
And yet it is an important part of our society, the whole judicial system, from the police operation on down. Yes, I think there should be tours and presentations by the police and by the fire department in the schools, and get people to understand that these are our servants. They are our public servants that help us preserve the peace and civility. This is police, fire, as well as the courts. And I think we need to understand their problems as well as they need to understand, of course, all of ours. And I think that's got to be part of public education. I don't know about that private education stuff, but it should be part of public education on a regular basis. I think some of our 19th district judges have tried to find ways to accommodate student groups at times, but I think it should be like a whole day commitment, not just an hour of the day. They should get the whole day to sit there and see the range of things. And
were you able to do that when you were in school?
No.
But, see, I grew up in Livonia, and that was that was, we did spend a day. We toured the jails. We went and sat in court when we were at a very impressionable age, about 14 or 15.
Yeah. You know? Well, in my day, we had police and fire in the schools, and they had local TV shows on, that were given, the time was given for free, can you imagine?
No.
by channels 4 and 2 and 7, you know, the big network shows in the 50s. And sometimes there were like puppet shows like Mr. Fire Dog or whatever it was, you know, but
right.
they were all about fire safety, fire prevention. They were always welcoming people to come to their facility, and they would have open houses regularly, and Dearborn has open houses regularly. And a big Halloween event that they did this year. I thought that was a great idea. They have things for Christmas. They sell Christmas trees and other things. So get involved. But our schools should do that, too. It's very important.
I agree.
Mentioning other parts of government here. Let's talk about schools. There's a segue. A stop right there. In the Times Herald and the Press and Guide this week, an editorial opinion or a letter to the editor, extensive letter to the editor, is from Fatima Sharif. And I actually got her email last week. Fatima, I'm sorry, we didn't feature it on the show. But it's in both papers this week, so it must be pretty important, right? Or it's a slow news week. But the opinion is about high schools. And this is issue that she raises, and her point of view, the issue has come up for the last couple of years.
Yep.
And surveys have been done, and nothing has changed. And I don't know why. I was trying to talk to my daughter about the issue in terms of a teacher's perspective in the Southfield Public Schools, and the issue is start classes later in the morning than what they are now.
And they cite scientific evidence about that, too.
You want to read the article, or you want me to summarize it?
Well, you better summarize it, because I don't even have it in front of me.
Well, that's tough, you know. you know, the new WHFR Journal, a show to which you are listening, is the only local radio news show where you can hear the pages turn on the air. That's
right. Not virtual pages.
Nope, nope. Here's a story, as it was in the Times Herald. High school should start later in the morning, by Fatima Sharif. She's an Edsel Ford High School senior. It's a Monday morning. It's dark outside and your head is throbbing, but you force your melted eyes open to start getting prepared for the day and think to yourself, why do I have to attend school so early? Last spring, the school administration moved up our high school start time to 7:20 a.m., but at the expense of not offering transportation for 30% of students who ride the buses, 27% of students who play sports, and 9% of Dearborn Center for Math, Science, and Technology students. For yet another year, we are left to deal with the consequences of starting school so early. Students are putting their heads down on their desks, dozing off, and not focusing on the desks not focusing on the lessons. This is not entirely due to waking up early in the morning, but it is a major factor that the misguided plan easily could have eliminated. Some people argue that going to bed early, reading a chapter of a book, and eating a healthy breakfast are all you need to wake up feeling refreshed and alive. The issue, for teenagers anyway, is much more complicated than that. According to research done at Brown University by Mary Carsladen, for students between the ages of 11 and 22, the brain chemical melatonin is distributed to the body between 11 p.m. and 8 p.m. And that's due to the darkness.
11 p.m. and 8
p.m. Yeah, 11 p.m. and 8 p.m. That's due to the darkness factor. Okay, so darkness triggers the melatonin production in our body, which allows us to sleep. It means that unless students are going to sleep by 9 p.m. at night, and that's before the melatonin kicks in, they will miss an entire cycle of rapid eye movement and remain sleepy all morning as a result. What she's talking about there, folks, rapid eye movement, or REM, okay, usually happens in the last hour or two of sleep. It takes that long to get started. You don't get into that deep sleep for hours, and the REM, as I understand it, is definitely in the last couple hours. I know for me, sometimes I wake up before the last 2 hours, and it's an old person thing. And when I go back to sleep, that's when I get into the dream mode. And the dream mode is REM, rapid eye movement, okay? And again, you may not remember your dream when you wake up, but that's the time that I always feel the most refreshed, is after I have, that I'm aware of the REM, or I sleep long enough until I know. So when you wake up and you go, oh, I had a great sleep, probably it was because you got into REM sleep. And so she makes a very valid point there. And it's very hard to get to sleep earlier, especially if you're not used to it, like your time on weekends. She mentioned that Dr. Charles Ciesler, a professor of sleep medicine at Harvard Medical School, name dropper, so he says that when students don't get an adequate amount of sleep, sleep deprivation accumulates, and within a week, that deficiency is equivalent to being awake for 24 hours. He says that the deficiency also has the same impact as being legally drunk in terms of reaction time and other measures of performance. Helena Thornton, who's a Dearborn High School parent and Etzel Ford High School graduate, said, quote, I'm concerned about the fact that the data shows that the students are missing an entire REM sleep cycle with an average of 7 hours sleep when studies show they need 9, and how sleep deprivation builds up over the week and has been shown to measurably affect performance comparable to being under the influence of substances. Recently, Thornton asked me, and again, this is an editorial from Etzel Ford High School senior Fatima Sharif, to conduct a survey with students from our school about their sleep patterns. In my sample of 42 students from grades 9 to 12, the average amount of sleep that students get is 7.17 hours. Compared that to the 9 hours that we're supposed to get, the results are quite alarming. I was also asked to survey them about their opinions on changing the school start time from 7:20 a.m. to 8:20 a.m. Only 40% of them liked the later start time.
Okay. I was going to say there's other reasons.
Oh, yeah. The others argued that they would like to be able to wake up at a later time, but if it means that they have to stay after 2:15 p.m., then they would rather just wake up earlier and get it over with. And I think that's one of those reasons. Students, and this is what my daughter said, even teachers want to get the heck out of there as soon as possible.
Sure. But I've read that they stagger the start time, the older kids going earlier, and then the middle school a little bit later, and then the elementary school a little bit later, because it's more convenient for parents to be able to get their kids to school, and it coincides with the parents' scheduling, too. In other words, they can't necessarily take all their kids to school at the same time. So
makes better use of the buses, too.
Absolutely.
Maybe they don't have enough buses for everybody at the same time.
It was for a very good reason, but this editorial brings up other detractions, I guess.
She says, instead of thinking about the start time plan, how it gets us out of school the earliest, so she's criticizing her own student peer group, she says, we should be...
Down there.
Yep. Out of school the earliest, we should be supporting a plan that will make our learning experience as productive as possible. We're going to be in school for the same amount of time anyway, so you might as well make the best use of it. Any parent, student, or community member who understands or supports this issue is asked to join in our communication to Dearborn Public Schools by signing the petition at, this is the web address, of course it's http://, but it is signon, that's sign.org/sign/Dearborn Public Schools. I think you can get to it from that point, okay? Just look for that. signon.org/sign/Dearborn-public-schools.
I'm sure there's a link on the website in the Downriver Sunday Times.
And also the Press and Guide. Hopefully have the editorial. Sometimes the ed ops are not on their website as a Press and Guide even.
Right.
So
okay.
Shame on them if they're not putting them there.
What about, this was not abnormal. When I went to high school, I played hockey. We had practice at 6 a.m. until 7, sometimes 7:30. Then we went to school. And then after school, we got out and I went to work from 4 to sometimes midnight. And then I got up in the morning. So I was, 4 or 5 hours, all through hockey season. Now, that explains my grades, by the way.
And I was going to say, for people who are out for sports, and I don't know how many that is, that maybe they need that earlier time to practice.
Yeah, because it's
like 2:15, and then they practice to 4 o'clock
Absolutely.
Or 5 instead of 6 or 7 at night.
That's exactly right.
If that's the time it takes to practice, and I think that's foolish. But it's a waste of time for high school students who should be studying, not playing sports and putting that much time into sports. I'm fine with intramural, but to practice 2-3 hours a day, I guess it's every day of the week, maybe they have Fridays off, and then all the time to go to the match. I know it's a big deal in high school to be a jock, to be a successful athlete. You're admired and worshipped, and you're carrying the school name and banner to victory and all that exaggerated claptrap.
But it does teach sports.
Can I say claptrap? I just did.
Okay. You said it twice.
Mm-hmm.
It does teach sportsmanship and teamwork, and there are a lot of positives that come from sports, but I do agree that it's overdone. Mm-hmm. I do agree.
Yeah. I know a few people. There's the only positive I can think of, because there's injuries. There's plenty of risks to anybody that does competitive sports, even in high school, is perhaps you'll get a scholarship to go to college.
Yeah.
Athletic scholarship.
Very few.
Very few get that. Few. It's better to get the grades, to get the knowledge. That'll hold you better off for your whole life.
Yeah.
It's a question of time well spent. What's the best way to spend your time?
It's about balance to me, because you can play sports, like you said, as well as get good grades and have a social life. It's all about that, you know?
I know. Well, so thank you, Fatima, for sharing that, and thank you for... I think it was your mother that sent me a copy of that last week, and it did get in the papers, and sounds like you do pretty well in an essay class here, intro English class at Henry Ford Community College if you come by, but
sounds like she may have a future as a columnist.
Yeah. Obviously, as you said, there's other issues. It's not, I wish we had Mustard in here or somebody from the school board, because I know they've tried to deal with this.
Right.
But 7:20 is too early. My start time was in Flat Rock, 8 a.m., and I thought that was too early, and I went to bed by 9 or 10 every night. But
even now, I think getting up early is against your policy, isn't it?
Yes, it's against my personal religion. Okay.
All right.
All righty. Moving right on to Jim Hightower, his commentary for the week. Just one commentary, so you better listen up good here, because I don't care about the first one, listen to the second. This is actually his 2012 award here, and it's an interesting award he gives. It's the Fruitcake of the Year Award. Jim Hightower, take a listen.
Looking back at 2012, who was the nuttiest political fruitcake of all? Donnie Trump, Rick Santorum, and Newt Gingrich instantly come to mind, but they're pros at the nutball game, so naming them is unfair to some of the amateur talent that burst on the scene at year's end. For example, Wayne the Insane LaPierre. This honcho of the NRA came completely unwrapped during a December press conference. In a tremulous voice, the gun industry lobbyist delivered a rambling 25-minute tirade. He assailed anyone who suggests that the sickening assault weapon slaughter of 6-year-old school kids in Connecticut should prompt us to ban those senseless weapons of mass killing. Rather, ranted LaPierre, the answer is more guns, turning American schools into armed fortresses. If that's crazy, Wayne concluded, then call me crazy. Yet, even Crazy Wayne wasn't 2012's top nut, for he was nipped at the last moment by a 7-man pod of nuts known as the Iowa Supreme Court. On December 21, this all-male court voted 7-0 to decree that, get ready to be whopper-jawed, a male boss may legally fire a female employee for no reason except that he finds her sexually irresistible. Try to get your mind around that. Even though she was not flirtatious, had no interest in him, and had been a stellar worker, she was ruled to be at fault, because the boss man can't control his lust. The learned men of the bench insisted that she was not fired because of her gender, but because of his feelings. So it was not discrimination, but merely an act by the boss to save his marriage. Another victory for family values. This is Jim Hightower saying, never mind that he was saving his marriage from himself, not from her. They say that justice is blind, but in Iowa, it's just plain nutty. For their supreme spasm of sublime nuttiness, we award 7 fruitcakes to the Iowa court.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
Thank you, Jim.
Wow.
It was. I think there's so many candidates for the fruitcake of the year, political fruitcake of the year,
sure.
That we wouldn't have time to run all the awards.
Yeah, but he threw some light on something. Something.
I spoke in favor of Wayne LaPierre's idea about armed guards in the schools, since we have armed guards in so many other places, and if you don't have armed guards in such public places with so many innocents around, it's like asking for somebody make a statement or
if you don't have them, it's asking for them. See, and I look at it the other way.
Right.
Who, you know what? The first person they'll shoot is that armed guard, and then they'll go on their
I know that too. That's why you need professionals. But but you know, you want them at airports? Do you? Okay. Oh, we got to have them at airports. Well, why more at airports than schools? I'd say take them out of the airports and put them in the schools.
Yeah.
I mean, that's our kids, folks. I mean, that's my spin on this. But Wayne LaPierre, he was crazy by saying, well, call me crazy if you don't agree. Well, of course, now everybody from John Stewart on down, they're saying, okay, you're crazy. You know, he just opened himself up there. So he shouldn't have done that. But, I mean, if you look at your priorities, I think most of us would rather protect our kids than our airports. Would you rather protect your courts? I guess, because the courts have, in some cases, criminals that go there, and then the criminals want to disrupt their trial and their sentencing, and so I guess you got to have armed guards around the courts, because you have criminals who are often armed or can be easily armed, you know, coming in there a lot, and their friends, and so you know, but think about the places, and LaPierre did indicate all the places we have armed guards these days, and we don't think twice about it. We think it's important, and why don't we think it's important to have them in our schools? So I humbly disagree there. Now, Dennis, in answering your question, because there's an editorial in the American Free Press. I know it's a national paper. We have the current issue with us this week. But among many articles, and it's just challenging. I love to read challenging, you know, and try to think it through, because I don't accept anything on face value. Not on TV, not in the papers. I try to think it through. And if I want more information, if questions pop into my head, as they always do, about why this, why that, I do some more research. I do some more reading. Well, one of the stories in there did talk about gun control, of course. In fact, there are several about gun control, this issue. Again, the American Free Press, folks, you have to subscribe to it. It is basically $2 an issue once every 2 weeks. I think the annual subscription is a discount. And if you want more information about it, you can go to AmericanFreePress.net. Okay, and even their website has a lot of stories for free that you can read there. And you can even get a daily email of the headlines. And then if you want to support the cause, which is, I believe, a nonprofit, believe it or not. I think it is. Maybe not. In any way, you can make that choice if you want to, but that's up to you. And so one of the things that they pointed out is that the difference might be the gun law here in Michigan, for example, that Snyder didn't sign, and that is concealed carry.
Right.
If you don't know who's got a gun, but you have the license, you have the gun, you practice frequently, you know, in a range, and you're responsible and so on. So which teachers, which administrators are doing concealed carry? You wouldn't be the walking target. You know, you wouldn't be the uniformed police officer. Although I think a uniformed police officer could wear a Kevlar jacket or something maybe all the time if you had to. But you're right. There's always problems with any of these armed guards at any of these facilities. I think they need that that support. By the way, on the school issue, too, my daughter said that, teachers want to get out of there earlier because they're not being helped, they're not being supported. They would like some of a real day to do their business. You know, they're shopping at stores. I know some stores are open all night, but, you know, to get to their bank and so on. And so as long as they're so poorly paid, they would like to have a little bit of business-type daytime advantage.
Oh, absolutely.
And they are. Our teachers are paid a ridiculously low amount for the responsibilities and the jobs that they should be doing. School budgets being constantly cut, so they don't even have the facilities and the equipment that they need for the lessons that were successful in the past. So there's an ongoing tragedy there in terms of education.
But wasn't there something, and I know other countries are doing something similar to this, where they extend the school week a little bit longer, or they go more not year-round, but more year-round, less vacation time, and they have shorter days? And that, to me, that always made sense.
Yep. You know? Yeah, I think it should be year-round. I'm sorry, kids, but there should be maybe more vacation periods, you know, but or maybe fewer hours a day.
Yeah, you could do both of those.
You know, go from 9 to 3, you know, but go 11 months a year, you know, with significant holiday breaks and teacher in-service time, you know. So teachers work on curriculum, learn new approaches to, I don't know, PowerPoint or new curriculum materials investigated. There's not time enough to do that in the regular year for the teachers, unless they stay up till 2 in the morning themselves, and then they don't get any sleep either. Okay, anyway, in American Free Press, one of the writers on a regular basis, Jim Traficant, and he talks about gun violence is just one symptom. And this sounds like Michael Moore that we read a few weeks ago. But he says, guns, guns, guns. All the problems and issues of America have been set aside by the tragic shooting in the Sandy Hooks Elementary School, and rightfully so. The outcry is to limit the firepower of guns. Even the National Rifle Association was at first silent, seemingly on the defense. It seems that the NRA is now being scrutinized regarding their political donor list and the money they invest in certain politicians. He says, I find it interesting that most of those politicians who have eaten at the trough of the NRA are not only silent, but also joining the mob that is now putting the NRA under the microscope. This, folks, describes real politics in America. Here's how it works. The politicians in Washington, D.C. wake up, walk to the window, and look out to see in which direction the mob is marching. Then they put on their trench coats and run out, fighting to get in front of the pack. He says, I have never received any political action funds from the NRA. I was an avid hunter and gun owner, but was opposed by the NRA because I was against the sale of armor-piercing ammunition. As I am, by the way. Okay. I've mentioned I'm a lifetime member of the NRA, as it turns out, just like Michael Moore is, by the way. And he says, I guess that was one of the NRA's litmus tests. So I totally disagree with their political agenda and some of the craziness. But I think they feel if they lose one battle, they'll lose them all.
Well,
you know, the slippery slope argument. I mean, that's I've seen other people in politics say that.
Yeah, but
I don't dare give an inch because then they'll take another inch and so on.
It's very cynical.
it's very cynical, and it's not the way to work the political system we have that's based on compromise. He says, evidently I failed the strict litmus test of the NRA and was not worthy of NRA support. The truth is I was one of the biggest supporters of gun rights in the Second Amendment, and I still am. He says, guns are not the problem. Gun violence is but one of the symptoms depicting the sad state of affairs in our nation. The trouble is no one's looking at the symptoms. It's exactly what Michael Moore has said, and yet I'm sure Jim Traficant and Michael Moore on opposite sides of political philosophy. This is a very interesting one, however, also in American Free Press, drugs, kids, and guns. And I'll just summarize this. I can do it. But several psychiatrists have stated this cause, and they did the research, is that teenage murderers, and they've gone back and looked at this, all had at least one thing in common, and they put six of them up there, pictured up there. They were all taking, quote, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, or SSRI drugs, okay? And I'm just looking here in a list, and this is only of hundreds of people. I'm not sure about the Sandy Hook fellow, if he was on similar drugs. But there's so many here, hundreds. And in terms of Michigan, they go back to 1991, where the postal employee kills three people and injures six. Mm-hmm. He was on Prozac.
Okay.
In 2007, here in Michigan, man kills one and injures two people in a workplace. I think there was a factory, an auto factory.
Okay.
That was antidepressants he was on, which is an SSRI. In 2008 in Michigan, one person was killed and two injured in another workplace. That was Cymbalta. Can I mention that name? Well, I mentioned Prozac. Why not Cymbalta? And just these drugs, Prozac, Zoloft, Luvox, antidepressants in general, which Prozac is, I guess, but it's a different category, Paxil, Zoloft, and Celexa.
These are drugs we hear every day on TV and commercials.
Right. Yeah, and you should notice the subtext, the disclaimer about the serious potential side effects.
But they never say you might go out and shoot. You know what I mean? That's I don't know.
In terms of teenagers who commit murder, there's a clear pattern that there's overuse of antidepressants and SSRI drugs. And the argument is in American Free Press. It's well researched. It's worthwhile to be looked at. And it says that Adam Lanza, they do say that Adam Lanza, who was the shooter in Sandy Hook, was possibly on some form of psychiatric medication. A little cough there. Related to reported diagnosis of a form of autism.
Wow. Live radio.
Yeah.
The opinions expressed are not necessarily...
It gets me all choked up. Yes, do the disclaimer.
I was just going to say that the opinions expressed on the new WHFR Journal are not necessarily those of anyone here at the station or Henry Ford Community College. But we're glad they let us talk.
So, I mean, you should look at American Free Press every now and then. I always give my copy. I subscribe because it's so much fun.
I write his coattails and he gives it to me.
Yeah, they do. They're known as, and I know I gave the copy to one of our former news directors a couple of years ago, and they just glanced at it and said, oh, they're a conspiracy paper.
That's awesome.
All they do is talk about stories about conspiracies. Well, folks, just because you're paranoid about conspiracies doesn't mean they aren't happening, okay? These things could happen. But they actually debunk one here on page 19 of the American Free Press. Again, this is their January 7th and 14th issue. Conspiracies swirl around Sandy Hook. And they couldn't believe this either, but people on the Internet are picking up rumors and tossing out the facts as they think they are. And they're saying some pretty crazy things. Hang on here. Now, I haven't seen these, but you know, they're just an example of some foolish conspiracy theories about this. Widely spread internet claims that no children were actually killed at Sandy Hook, that it's all a hoax.
Really?
Others say, from the internet, that local police and firemen were in on the shooting, working to ensure as many kids as possible were gunned down. Others insist it was a CIA mind control operation, quote unquote. They claim the alleged shooter was brainwashed into being the patsy, quote unquote, and that other gunmen carried out the murders, the same ones other conspiracy theorists say didn't even happen at all. Well, they want to clearly say that in terms of their paper, certainly there's mind-bending drugs, and the CIA has done mind-control experiments. I wouldn't put it past them. And certainly Mossad, which is the Secret Service of Israel, has been involved in those things just as well. They're the Israeli version of our CIA, sort of. So there's some truth to some of these other theories about why things happen. But
you don't think they're related to this particular
incident
at all?
No, they say very clearly here, and that's the point of this, and to help the opinion you might have of American Free Press off the track, it says time and time again it's been discovered that many mass shooters have been on mind-bending psychiatric drugs. That goes back to their other story that so many teenagers who have committed murders, hundreds over the last several years, over the last two decades, in fact, have been on either antidepressants or the SSRI drugs. And so there seems to be a direct connection there that this is a drug problem, certainly.
Or a heck of a coincidence.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
Well, it can't be a coincidence. It just can't be. The numbers show that it's more than a coincidence, certainly.
Sure.
And this writer, Michael Collins Piper, for this story, he says, frankly, if I was the head of one of the companies that produce such drugs, I would keep a quote-unquote crisis team ready for, that's a public relations crisis team, folks, ready for action every time there's a shooting. My internet trolls would be out there cranking out stories saying that the CIA brainwashed the shooters, thereby misdirecting attention from what could be the real underlying cause, which is overprescription of these kinds of drugs, certainly to teenagers. And he says, there's a conspiracy theory to chew on. He says, AFP, the American Free Press, tries to stick to what we believe to be the facts, and we won't publish any story because it sounds good or because somebody thinks there might be something to it. So all that rumor is out there on the internet. In fact, there's an Allstate ad on TV right now. The man is using an app on his smartphone to identify for Allstate an accident he just had.
Mm-hmm.
And a woman comes up to him with her dog or whatever that she's walking on the street. And she said, oh, I didn't know that Allstate had an app. And he said, yeah, they do. And he said, well, I read on the internet they didn't have it. He said, you believe everything you read on the internet? And she said, oh, yeah. Yeah, they couldn't put it on the internet if it wasn't true.
That's right.
How many people believe that? How many people believe the internet is a source for guaranteed true information? It is not. Well, so the final sort of punchline is, she says, I'm just out here waiting for my boyfriend, I guess with her dog, I think. Anyway, I met him on the internet. He's a French model. And so this big hulking guy walks in ugly. And he heard the comment about a French model, and he said, oh, bonjour, which is bad French for hello, you know, which means he doesn't really know French. He's not really French. And so he lied to her on the internet about his credentials or background. And I can't imagine, though, if she saw his picture, she'd want to date him anyway. But it was just, ooh, a French model.
Right.
You know? So you can't believe a lot of stuff. Even if it's in the papers, even in the American Free Press or the Detroit News or Free Press, you need to read other sources, and you need to read between the lines, as they used to say. You need to read critically. Ask yourself questions. How can that be? What evidence could there be? Have they given me the evidence? If they haven't, you shouldn't necessarily believe it to the extent that you act on that in some way. Okay? Take action. This is what they teach in college, or at least I think they do still, is that you only take action based on things that are that you have decided are worthy. And that means several different points of view and sources that identify that that's the correct course to take. And you might say, well, that takes a lot of time to do. It's true. I'm on the internet 2 hours a day to sources that I believe are credible, or at least I'm cross-comparing stories.
Sure.
And that's one thing a retired person can do. But even most college professors have to do that in order to keep their own lectures straight and valid, you know, because things keep changing, too.
Well, I would wager that 2 hours a day is probably a little more than the average, but not by much. It's what you're looking at.
Well,
it's,
yeah. You know, most people are, I mean, I've surveyed my telecom students, at least before I retired anyway, in intro classes, and they're actually using one medium or another, electronic medium,
mm-hmm.
And this is including Facebook and phone calls and so on, close to 18 hours a day. It's overlapping time.
Sure.
They multitask. They can talk on the phone while they're on the internet and listen to their iPod at the same time. So it probably is only about 10 to 12 hours a day. But that's unbelievable. I mean, even on this campus, I've noticed even 15 years ago when cell phones started, everybody has to call somebody when they come out of class.
So in light of the editorial that we read earlier,
yeah.
That may not be the only issue. getting more sleep might be. And then I think that starts with a family. I have two kids, and we tried to make sure that they were in bed at a decent time. It wasn't that hard.
Yeah, I'd like to see a survey of those teenage murderers. How much sleep were they getting regularly?
Because
Ms. Sharif was indicating that many psychiatrists say that lack of sleep can even make you appear like you're under the influence of drugs.
Of substances, alcohol or otherwise.
Whatever,
sure.
Or psychiatric drugs, or you know. So anyway, that's keep those ideas flowing out there. This is the new WHFR Journal. We're coming down to the end of our hour in about 6-7 minutes, and Highway 61 with Joanne Kay, Best in the Blues, is coming up at 2 o'clock, just so you know that. Okay. Oh, a nice thing here, just mentioning highlights. Gary Warrenchuk, he has been reelected by his peers as chairman of the Wayne County Commission. So I think this is his third term or something. So he gets to be the somewhat stronger leader than before. They passed some resolutions that give him a little bit more power, although still it's Fecano that has all the power in Wayne County as a strong government leader. And strong, I mean, by the nature of their political organization. But he has been reelected, and it's kind of nice to know that somebody who has been Dearborn-based and has events locally that we can actually might feel we have more access to him or to his ear, as they say, right, on future issues that have to do with the county. Henry Ford Community College's big band and the vocal group Evergreen Blue are going to have a concert on January 26th, and I think it's, do you have the paper? I think it's, that's a couple weeks away. We'll get the details for you here. Right. I think it's at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center on January 26th. It's called the Bop and Pop Concert, although in the Wednesday Press and Guide, it's on page 3A, Dennis, it's indicated as Bop and Bob. So I might think Bop with Bob. And I'm thinking, who is Bob?
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't Bob the serial killer in the Twin Peaks TV series? So you don't want to go out and bop with that Bob.
And you're right. It's at the Michael A. Guido Theater in the Ford
Community
right. Performing Arts.
Okay. So that's January 26th. And there's an admission charge, but it's good to help support our HFCC music department. And, of course, it's our big band. Maybe Rick Goward or maybe Randy Knight directing at that time.
Didn't
read the story, right? And, of course, G. Kevin Dewey, and we always say the G stands for G. Whiz.
It's Kevin Dewey.
Golly, it's Kevin Dewey. And so that's always going to be a great entertainment night for you and supporting the HFCC music program. There's a great editorial I'll just bring your attention to, a Chad Salweski. First time I think I've seen him in the Press and Guide this Wednesday, and he's the political writer for their papers out in Oakland County, and he talks about the fiscal cliff, that average Joe, I think that's sort of like you and me, the 99% anyway, is the big loser in that last fiscal cliff negotiation. And you might say, well, he's conservative or something. No, he's actually, I think, sort of a liberal. I have comments from here in front of me from the Tax Foundation. That's the National Tax Foundation, Washington, D.C. They're extremely conservative, and they think it was a disaster. And, of course, we've got that debt ceiling problem coming up soon. And that's in a couple weeks. And so they either start trimming costs or come up with, I think the big problem that Sawoski mentioned, as well as that we should get our representatives to do something about in Lansing if they have the wherewithal or the possibility, is to reform the tax system once and for all. Not just close loopholes. Not just add a little bit of progressivity, which is there now, you know, that ooh, they have to pay 4% more tax if they're richer than $400,000 or $450,000 a year. 4% more? Well, thank you very much. What about the deductions? And, you know, that won't work out to hardly anything. Mitt Romney lives on his 15% capital gains alone, so he's not paying his fair share as I see it. I'm just picking on him since he was the last presidential candidate that lost, of course. So read Chad Salweski, and maybe go to the National Tax Foundation website. Apparently the Michigan Fair Tax, which is an idea that is not only good for Michigan but also for the country as a whole. Well, they're still alive. They're still sending me emails.
It's gathering steam, it seems, isn't it?
Well, I hope. I mean, typically conservatives would be more in favor of that, but people that get elected, they don't want to do anything too big. It might cause trouble.
Yeah.
You know, a big new idea that would really freshen the whole situation. Oh, no, let's just do a little tweaking because we might be criticized for something real big if it goes wrong.
Well
try it. Maybe
it goes,
we'll like it.
Exactly.
You can always undo this stuff, sometimes with difficulty, but if you don't put it into being petition proof.
Can I bring up something I know is not on your list? I have to go back to Dearborn Heights really quickly.
Yeah.
April 8th, the city will celebrate 50 years as a city.
Wow.
1963, yep. And what they're doing right now, there's a gentleman, this was on the Mayor Dan Pileko show, which is airing right now on WDHT, a gentleman named Anthony. And Anthony, I'm so sorry. I had trouble pronouncing your name when I saw it headed in front of me, and I don't right now. But he's kind of coordinating this. Member Lisa Hicks Clayton, councilwoman, mm-hmm. she's also on the committee with the mayor. And what they want is for people between now and, they said, the 15th, which is Tuesday, send in your pictures. Any pictures mm-hmm. you have, and send it to the mayor's office. If I don't have that address, but for more information, you can call the mayor's office at 313-791-3490.
But not on Friday.
But not on Friday. It has to be Monday through Thursday. And on Monday, get your pictures together. You'll get them back. And all you have to do is include your contact information, name, address, how long you've been in the city, a phone number in case they have questions, although that won't be published. And it's going to go on a wall of fame in City Hall. They're doing a lot of activities between now. And what you and I, Jay, will report on this as it comes closer to the time.
Oh, absolutely. I love any renovation story.
A renovation?
Renovation story. Isn't that what you said?
Well, no. This is celebrating the city's 50th anniversary.
But they're not renovating?
Well, they're renovating. They'll look at City Hall and put the wall of fame up. You kind of threw me off on that one. Anyways,
well, because I've got a renovation story in front of me that I'm going to finish with. So
please, go ahead.
Okay. Late-breaking news on DearbornPatch.com, and we understand there's some cutbacks there, so there might not be as many stories or reporters digging into the dirt, which they were doing better than the local newspapers, but now they've had, according to Dennis, I'm quoting you here, so maybe you're not.
Hemorrhaging money.
Hemorrhaging money nationwide.
Yes.
They're part of AOL, which has been hemorrhaging money for quite a few years, but I thought it was a great idea, and they just can't seem to get enough advertising support one
way
or the
other.
Right,
you would think that website model
But Jessica Carreras, who we interviewed on the show a couple of years ago when she started, is doing a fantastic job. She's pretty much all alone as the full-time editor and story writer now, but it's a very important resource. And so we just got this, today. This email from DearbornPatch.com. The city of Dearborn has supported a $4 million tax exemption for Ford Motor Company. Here we go again. Didn't Ronald Reagan say that? There you go again. Okay.
Hey, that wasn't a horrible imitation.
And they held a public hearing on the matter at Dearborn City Hall. Nobody came and said anything in Ford or against it. Well, I didn't know. They're holding the hearing. Mm-hmm. Nobody told me, and I thought I was connected to this issue. Ford will make a $49 million investment to upgrade machinery and equipment, but I guess they can't afford the extra $4 million in taxes. So, and of course, if you don't have to pay, why should you?
Right.
Okay. If they can get a city, if they can bully a city into getting stuck for, and Dearborn is going to lose $2 million in potential taxes from this over the next 2 years.
But they're looking at a bigger picture, too.
Well, of course, and all the whole city council went for it. Supposedly, even though the company is going to save $4 million in taxes, $2 million of which is city taxes, they're supposed to afford claims. I'd like them to guarantee it myself, that they're going to hire 132 new jobs. I wonder, is that full or part-time? And create, it's going to support 132 jobs, so just maybe allow them to continue, mm-hmm. but and create only 10 new jobs. So I don't see how creating 10 new jobs, and of course, it's not guaranteed they'll create those 10 new jobs, and we don't know if they're full or part-time, is going to somehow counter the loss of $2 million to the city.
Yeah.
But of course, Gary Evanko, city assessor, said in his opinion, it's not going to impair the finances of the city. I'm sorry, Gary, losing $2 million, you just can say, oh, it's no big deal. What? I don't understand. Maybe you can afford it. We still got a little bit of a rainy day fund.
A little bit.
But losing $2 million is no big deal. And why would, I'm totally against all these tax exemptions for either new business coming into the state or coming into your city or coming into your county, and the companies get to trade off one city against the other, one state against the other. It should be standard taxes for all business all across the country and no exemptions for anything, period. You either have a going business that succeeds or you don't. If Ford can put up $49 million for this, they can certainly put up another $4 million for the taxes that they should pay the state of Michigan and the people of Dearborn. Even though, yes, there's these abatement procedures and rules in place that might allow it if the city agrees, but I'm totally against that in general, right?